everyone. This is Bethany Constant. Welcome to Becoming Bolder. We are recording in Charlottesville, Virginia, at Westminster Canterbury of the Blue Ridge, also known as WCBR. Becoming Bolder is a meaningful conversation meant to share lived journeys. At WCBR, we believe older adults, or elders, are to be respected and valued. Every older adult has talents and wisdom to share. We are all more than our past. We believe that acknowledging our present, the future, and possible selves is important because aging brings new opportunities and capacities for growth, contribution, self-expression, and for sharing our experiences. This podcast shines a light on older adults on the path of elderhood. Our guests are accomplished, involved in, and a vital part of their community. They live life with intention and, in a variety of ways, act as a guide for those who come behind. They nurture well-being among communities. We invite you to listen in. Together, we are becoming bolder. Today, we are joined by Nancy Baum. Nancy grew up in several parts of the United States. 4 years near her father's boyhood farm in southeast Kansas, 4 years in New York City where her father was doing war work, and then in Minneapolis where she expected to live her whole life. That changed when she met John while attending the University of Minnesota. After graduation, they married and moved to St. Louis, where she taught junior high English while he completed a PhD in organic chemistry. 3 children and several moves later, while living in the Silicon Valley, she changed career paths and became a computer programmer, ultimately retiring from Agilent Technologies, which had been split off from Hewlett-Packard. Nancy and John moved to WCBR 3.5 years ago at the urging of their daughter and her wife who live nearby, and their son and his husband who live in Florida. The first thing they experienced was the COVID lockdown. In retrospect, Nancy says they feel lucky to have had that relatively quiet period. After living for 50 years in Palo Alto, California, it was good to have a bit more time to adjust to their new home here in Charlottesville. Thank you for being here today, Nancy.
I'm happy to be here.
So I know I'm going to enjoy talking with you today, and people are going to hear, because we shared a little bit about some of your thoughts and leading into the podcast. So let's get right into it. What do you most enjoy in your life now?
Well, I think it's the freedom to make choices. Here at WCBR, I'm just thoroughly enjoying my days. I can spend the whole time here on the campus. Mm-hmm. I call it the campus. Mm-hmm. Or I can go out to Charlottesville. I have the opportunity in my cottage to cook our own meals, but I don't do that too often. Mm-hmm. But I have the opportunity to do that and otherwise go to the main dining room or even take out food for dinner. Or I can participate in these many activities or not, just as I see fit. Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating to meet all these people. And the best thing about it is that I can remember their names, especially if they wear their name tags. Mm-hmm. And I've decided that it's very important for me to wear hearing aids mm-hmm. so that I can hear their stories. And I think that's one of the most important assistive devices here that people can use. I mentioned going out to Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. You know, we're new here, so I don't really know the history too well. So I'm learning about it, and I'm learning about Charlottesville itself and really enjoying that. But I have to say that a special joy that we have is that we're nearer, much nearer our children mm-hmm. and also other members of our family who live on the East Coast. So that's a great joy.
Yes, yes. You have a daughter and her wife who live here in Charlottesville or close by?
Close by. They live in Albemarle County.
Okay, yeah, very close. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that's good. That's good to have family close by if you need them. Yeah. I appreciate that you mentioned the hearing aid. That's, I think, a underutilized device of people in general. Not only older people, younger people sometimes have hearing deficits. So it's good to hear that you're using one. So what is your greatest passion, and how has it maybe changed over time, or has it not changed over time?
I don't think it's changed over time. Mm. I have always been passionately curious. Mm. I've always wanted to know the journalistic who, what, when, where, how of things. And I remember, my two-year-old always asking why or what, and that's me at 83. So I guess if I were to say what the passion is, it's education. Mm. That's the core of my passion. When I taught in the public schools, I really tried to ignite the passion of my students simply because I was so curious about the world, and I really wanted them to have this same sense of curiosity. Method. How did I do that? Well, my sainted Quaker grandmother, who herself had been a teacher, and this is a long time ago, she was very young at the time, she'd given me an old adage, and it's about teaching someone how to fish rather than giving them the fish. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how well I did with my 13-year-olds and my 14-year-olds and my 15-year-olds, but I did try. So for me, continuing education, it's really been a kind of a theme through my life. And when we moved here, I was really pleased to see that I could continue that education. For example, I really appreciate the fact that there's a nearby community college, the center at Belvedere, of course, UVA. And the thing that really surprised me was right here at WCBR. I really hadn't known that WCBR brings in outside speakers. And I didn't know that the residents led these marvelous things, such as the foreign policy forum that I went to yesterday. Mm-hmm. It's just such an opportunity for people to teach other people from the experiences of their lives. And I think another great thing is that the WCBR Foundation provides funds for education for associates.
Yes.
That's a very personal kind of thing that happens right here. So I do appreciate that. Because I still think that everyone ought to have access to formal education as well as the education that they pick up along the way. Like my father-in-law. My father-in-law came as an immigrant from Germany. And he always used to say that he graduated from the school of hard knocks.
Yeah.
And I would hope that more people have a chance to actually have a formal education than graduate from that school. So about me, I think my own growing edge is trying to find out what's known about the mind-body connection. I'm very interested in that. And I'm also interested in the history and politics of the Middle East. How could one not be at this point in time? But on both of those topics, through the years, I've read a lot, fiction, nonfiction. I've had discussions with knowledgeable friends and family. I've taken classes. And I'm all in the purpose of trying to answer those journalistic questions that I mentioned earlier. So my asking time is only limited by whatever years I have left.
I like that you said the asking time. So, Nancy, can you tell me about the best advice you ever got? It sounds like you are a question asker, but also there's opportunities for people to tell you things, right? So what have you done with maybe things you've been told or shared with you?
Well, I've been told a lot of things through my years, but and I don't know where I picked this up, but one of the pieces of advice I got was that it's important to learn to live with ambiguity. And that kind of fits in with my curiosity, because I have to accept that there are questions that we ask of life which don't have clear and provable answers necessarily. I do listen carefully to what scientists have to say, because I've lived with a scientist for 63 years. And I really do have the highest respect for scientific findings. But one of the things that John has taught me is that whatever has been proven now has been proven, and his quote is, in the light of present knowledge.
Yes.
Things change. And there are ambiguities that we need to accept. Mm-hmm. So what has been proved today sometimes have to be tossed aside. You know, I understand that when new data has been discovered and applied to a question, that there will be new conclusions drawn. Mm-hmm. And those may be disproved in the future.
Yeah. That's funny. You know, I know John has his PhD in organic chemistry. I was actually talking with a chemist once about the change in chemistry, even over the years. You discover new things, new elements, et cetera. And I said, well, what do you think will happen when the next one is discovered? And surprisingly, this person said to me, I don't think anything new, any new elements will be discovered. And I thought, really? You know?
I've heard the same thing.
Yeah. So, who knows?
But you know, that doesn't mean that new things won't be discovered. The James Webb Telescope, mm-hmm. for example. I read an article recently that probably says something about this ambiguity thing, mm-hmm. that says it better than I can say. I'm going to quote now. Webb helps us to know, but also to unknow.
Mm.
It gives us stunning new discoveries while simultaneously challenging us to rethink and rebuild our understanding of the past.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
It is. Yeah. So shifting gears a little bit, and I think this comes along with learning, continuous learning, right? Why do you think ageism exists? And what do you think we can do to overcome it?
Well, age is one of the first things that we notice about another person.
Mm-hmm.
We judge how old they are based on, you know, the cues like body shape or clothing or speech.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that assessment may be incorrect, and I might have a stereotype, for example, about young people, and I might have another stereotype about old people. Age is a really quick and convenient way to kind of categorize people and then act toward them in the way that you think would be appropriate. Mm-hmm. And it may not be. That stereotype may be totally incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's been lots written about ageism. You can go to the library and find books, many mm-hmm. books. And the National Institutes of Health have also published many articles based on research that's been done and looking toward the health system and the way health is delivered to all people, and especially in our case, to older people.
Mm-hmm.
People are becoming aware that there are stereotypes that need to be overcome about mm-hmm. ageism. There's stereotypes that need to be overcome about our perception of what needs to be done toward people who are of a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in addition to what other people are looking at in terms of ageism, I think we have to look to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I'm kind of prone to saying, oh, I can't do that. I'm too old. It'll embarrass me if I do that. And I think that that's probably something I need to look at in myself. And if I can get over that, I certainly would make some steps toward getting bolder.
Mm-hmm.
As I think about it, though, I think it's a way of overcoming ageism is to look at intergenerational relationships. I think that's really important. And back to WCBR, there have been a couple of things that I'm aware of that I think were good. One was a pen pal project mm-hmm. that I think you set up, Bethany.
Yes.
To have people who live here meet and write things to youngsters in a school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm aware that there have been parties that have invited families and that way have made it possible for people to interact. Yes. Intergenerationally.
Yes, recently the Halloween trick-or-treating. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
So do you think, as a follow-up to that, do you think that ageism is different for men and for women because of our society's beauty standards as well?
Now, that's a really good question, because I've been looking at my wrinkles, mm-hmm. and I've been thinking, I really do look a lot older than I did 10 years ago. Mm. But I look at John... Of course, he wears a beard. Mm-hmm. And to my way of thinking, or to my eye, he doesn't look much older. Mm. Now, that's the eye of love, of course. Mm-hmm. and your question has to do with, in general, with do men have an easier time with aging than women? Mm-hmm. And given the number of cosmetics I see in the shelves, I kind of think that maybe that's a true thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would generally say that's probably true also. And I think it comes back to something you mentioned about ageism against ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to think about how much of that ageism around women and beauty standards is self-inflicted, or is it afflicted by others, or both. I don't know. These are things
both.
I think about.
I think it's both.
Yeah, yeah. If you could talk to a younger version of yourself, what would you say to her, Nancy?
Well, there are a number of things, and it all depends on whether I would be listening to myself. Mm-hmm. I think if I was to tell myself something, I would say, go for it, which is kind of another way of saying be bolder. I think I'd encourage her to ask the question, what is the worst thing that could happen? Now, this, of course, doesn't apply to really, really important things, but to many things it could apply. And I think this started when our younger daughter was in the fourth grade, and she had a teacher of whom she was very scared. Mm. And actually, she was quite scary, even to parents. So I suggested that to her. You know, what is the worst thing that could happen? I think it helped, but we'd have to ask her. Another quick fix, and I still use this, and I think I actually used it when I sat down here to talk to you, was a little mantra about public speaking. Mm. It's to say to myself, I'm glad I'm here, I'm glad you're here, and I know what I know.
Yes.
So it's helped me. I also think that she ought to find someone who can really listen to her. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily suggest things for her to do, but listen and help her articulate what it is she wants to say about what's going to happen or what might happen, and then just encourage her to listen to her own thoughts. And then, of course, she ought to become a listener as well. Mm-hmm. That's a very important thing. It's a very reciprocal kind of thing.
Yes.
But this past week, we were... going through some old photographs. And it happened that I found a poem that kind of fits in with this notion of talking to one's younger self. Mm. This was the poet had found a picture of herself when she was wearing bell bottoms and platform shoes. And that's the name of the poem.
Okay.
But this is just the last stanza. Mm-hmm. And the poem is by Maria Maggiati Gillen. And the last stanza goes like this. Looking back at us, I would like to tell my younger self, look how fortunate you are. The man you love beside you, your children sleeping in their safe beds, your friends around you. Listen, be grateful for the moments caught in these photographs. The world full of possibility, the sky not yet darkened.
Mm. You need to send that to me. I want to read the rest. That's good. Yeah. So you mentioned the... I know what I know. I mm-hmm. love that, because it reminds me also of what we call the imposter syndrome, which is particularly noted that women suffer from, so to speak, more than men. That, you know, we've been over time told, you know, we're less than, or that we can't do XYZ, frankly, because we're female or women. Did you experience that in your life growing up, or did you see it change over generations from your grandmother to your mother to you to your daughter?
The imposter syndrome is real. Mm-hmm. That I have experienced that in my own life, mm-hmm. for sure. I think, though, that it is something that we can overcome.
Yeah. It takes work, though, right?
It does.
Self-awareness, yeah.
It does.
Yeah. So how do you take care of yourself, Nancy, like biologically, socially, psychologically, spiritually? How do you self-care?
Well, self-care takes a lot longer than it used to. Mm-hmm. But it's really important. So I have loved being active physically. I did mountain climbing, you know, I did skiing, cross-country skiing. In and on the water, mm-hmm. I always loved that. But at this point in my life, this is kind of funneled down to walking.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many places to walk around mm-hmm. this area. Right here at WCBR, you know, you can do the perimeter walk. You can walk down by the nature pond. Mm-hmm. You can go over to Martha Jeff. There's a pond over there to walk around, and, mm-hmm. and you're in the a wildflower area at that point. You can go over to, and we do go over to Ivy Creek and walk mm-hmm. around there. There's the Monticello Saunders Trail.
Yes.
Just 10 minutes away. And what we've discovered is that there are little woodland trails that branch off of that main trail,
mm.
and they're actual hiking trails,
mm.
and you can get up to the trails have great names. I can't remember them all, but one is the Giant Magnolia Trail.
Mm.
Another one is Spring Room Trail. It's really fun to walk through those trails in any time of the year. So we do that, and then again a WCBR class that I really love is the Tai Chi class. It's sponsored mm-hmm. by the foundation, and it's mm-hmm. really worth it. It improves my focus and definitely my balance.
Mm-hmm.
I really like it. So you asked about psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that one's a tough one. I am basically an introvert, mm-hmm. and I'm really quite comfortable with myself. I think I'm good company. But I also know that I really need people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, here at WCBR, there are so many compelling ways to be with other people. There's no reason to be alone if you don't want to be. There are so many activities that can happen, that happen every day and that you can participate in. I'm a reader. Just one example. I'm a reader, and there's a book group that meets every month. I thoroughly enjoy discussing whatever book of the month we've read. And that's just one example of something that I like to do.
Yeah, that's good for you.
And then you ask about how do I take care of myself spiritually. I was born into the Christian tradition. I've got a mixture of Quaker and Presbyterian and Lutheran
mm-hmm.
in my immediate background. In fact, my mother was the daughter of a Lutheran minister who, when my father asked for her hand, would not agree to the marriage because he was not Lutheran.
Was he Catholic?
No, he was Quaker.
Oh, okay.
And so there was a bit of negotiation that had mm-hmm. to go on there. And finally, my grandfather married them.
Mm-hmm.
They worked it out. But recently, we've added a lot of different branches to our tree from Catholic, Jewish, Buddhist, and several other Protestant traditions, mm-hmm. Both conservative and liberal. So it's a good thing that my curiosity led me to study world religions in the past,
yes.
because our family has just expanded in the way people look at God.
Mm-hmm.
So currently, John and I attend a church here in Charlottesville called Sojourners. Mm-hmm. It's a United Church of Christ church, and it offers me a really good base for my spirituality,
mm.
and it's a good jumping off point for service to the wider Charlottesville community. Right now we're doing a drive to gather toiletries for the Fluvanna correctional center for women. Mm. The women there get very little money to spend, and this is one way of showing that we haven't forgotten them. Mm-hmm. And I'll be joining a group over at Gordon Library after the holidays, doing a project called Books Behind Bars, mm-hmm. where prisoners send requests for books.
Yes.
And we go through the stacks of donated books and find the ones they want and ship them off to them.
Yeah. That's meaningful work, especially for people who have been marginalized from society.
I agree.
Yeah. I like the name Sojourners for the church, too. I've driven by, I feel like, several times.
So. Yeah. You can't miss it. It's got a big Black Lives Matter sign.
Yeah. What are you proudest of? I mean, you've mentioned education and service work and lots of things, but mm-hmm. what are you proudest of?
I don't like that word applied to myself.
Okay.
So instead, I just want to say that I've had a life that's been very rich in many kinds of relationships, many kinds of things that have happened mm-hmm. in our lives. Well, as parents, John and I went through heartbreak when our older daughter died, and then we experienced some unexpected realities when our two other children came out. And the amazing thing, I think, is that we emerged from these experiences still loving and being loved by our children and by each other. Until I was sure that my kids could read, you know, being an ex-English teacher, you know, I had that concern. And also because I really liked being at home with them. I did part-time work and volunteering. You know, I did PTA work and League of Women Voters work, but I also did tutoring, and I was a teacher's aide to a really wonderful fourth grade teacher in the school that my children attended. And I became an administrator for a state-funded program which was aimed at improving schools. And also I was an independent contractor. I have woodworking as one of my many hobbies. I've always been a maker. And quilting and knitting and sewing and, you know, all those handwork kinds of things. But woodworking really intrigued me, and I started a larger kind of project by kind of informally becoming an apprentice to a person who was building playground structures out of wood. Mm-hmm. So I did that work in Palo Alto, where we lived, for various nursery schools. I built wooden playground structures mm-hmm. for a few years. But then a time came when I felt that I really needed to enlarge my life. My kids could read. I'd done all these kind of part-time things, mm-hmm. and I wanted to go back to work. So I found a program called New View, which was looking for people, especially women, who had degrees in other fields than computer programming, and they provided the classes and an internship in computer programming. The internship was to give us the experience of working in the computer field. So I took advantage of that program, and as a result, I took positions in the programming field, which often involved a lot of international travel, which was different from what my life had been previous. Mm-hmm. And through all that, John was my cheerleader, and I was very delighted by his acceptance of my need to have that freedom. And then finally, when our parents reached their 90s, we were able to step up to manage their needs. Mm-hmm. And we also helped a couple of our friends through their final health challenges. So I think the interesting thing about that is that we managed to find joy along the way. It was one of the gifts that we were given.
Yeah, and I appreciate that you said how you don't like the word or the phrase proudest of. And it sounds to me it's more about fulfillment and meaning. Right?
I think so.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you're here at the podcast for the first time, but what is the last time you did something for the first time?
Oh, this is kind of silly, but last week, John and I took the train for the first time since we'd learned and moved to Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first train ride I'd had on the East Coast since my family moved away from New York City a few years ago. But it always seems here, since we've moved here, that I'm doing things for the first time. Mm-hmm. I joined the oil painting class and the watercolor painting class. And we were encouraged to display our work last spring in a class exhibit of paintings in the gallery. So I did that. And then, let's see, the memoir group did a presentation in the rotunda. And I read one of my memoirs.
Mm-hmm.
It was called A Cold Night in Kentucky.
Okay.
And that was the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I think being here has given me the opportunity to quite a few new things. And most importantly, I think, is to feel supported as I did those things.
Yeah. Sounds like even though you've said you're introverted, it sounds like you're being adventurous, trying new things.
I'm trying to become bolder.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are you most looking forward to? Or what do you feel like maybe next for you?
Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas, of course. John bakes the world's best Christmas Stollen.
Okay.
And his sister bakes the best Christmas cookies you've ever had, and she always sends us a generous box. But in addition to that, I try to keep my calendar pretty full.
Mm-hmm.
You can't help but keep your calendar full here because there are so many activities. But I have plans to visit my sister in Denver and my son and his husband in Florida, and go up to Vermont next April to see the full eclipse. And
that'll be fun, beautiful, whatever. I don't know how you would describe that, right? Different?
Different. I've tried to observe eclipses whenever I've had the opportunity. I haven't been one of those people, you know, who travel around the world seeing eclipses. I have a friend who does that. But this one is in my sister-in-law's backyard, so why not?
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be fun. I remember, I don't know, what year was that when we had the big eclipse? Maybe somewhere around 2018 or so, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember all of my coworkers and I went up onto the rooftop of a building at VCU. And we had the special glasses we all had to wear.
Right.
We were
still in Palo Alto at that time. And so we went out to the Baylands, the area right around San Francisco Bay.
Yeah.
With lots and lots of other people. It was just really fun. And the day was perfect.
Yes.
Vermont, unfortunately, may not be that great a place.
Mm-hmm.
It gets to be a little cloudy there. But back to looking forward to something. John and I were wildflower docents when we lived in California. We knew pretty much about the wildflowers. And we started learning what's around here in Virginia. My daughter gave us a book of the plants of Virginia, which is about 4 inches thick. And we're working our way through that. Every time we find something that we don't know, we look it up and find the scientific name for it. And currently, my favorite is the goldenrod. It's a plant that I really didn't see in California. And let's see if I can think of the scientific name for it. It's the one I like is Solidago odora, or the anise-scented goldenrod. It's one of the 30 native species in Virginia, and about 28 of them are here in Albemarle County. So the leaves of this particular goldenrod have a licorice scent when you brush against them or if you crush them.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew?
Yeah, I have one at home. I'll have to rub its leaves and see if it smells for me. So you've mentioned a few times ways that you think you're becoming bolder. What else maybe do you have to share on that topic?
If I define becoming bold as being more courageous, one of the areas that I'm working on is learning how to better articulate my opinions and beliefs in a way that doesn't cause controversy, which is considerate of other people's opinions and tries to open up a two-way conversation. I think it's pretty important that many of us learn that, because we need to converse with each other, because our world is moving way too rapidly toward a kind of authoritarianism that can only be countered by much communication.
And maybe trying to understand each other, right? Like, we don't have to agree all the time, but at least try to hear each other.
That's my point.
Yeah.
Listen to each other. Mm-hmm. Listen respectfully. Sometimes we have to agree to disagree, but try to maintain the friendships and the family relations.
And so what haven't I asked you, Nancy, that maybe you'd like to share?
Well, I do know that one thing in my life that's changing, and one thing that I'm going to have to accommodate myself to and become familiar with, is probably one of the forms of dementia. Mm. My challenge will be, and this is a big challenge, to continue to cherish the people whose minds and brains are changing through no fault of their own, and try to figure out how to live with this reality. And of course, these changes could happen to me. It could be my brain that changes. Mm-hmm. So that's an important one. But I also hope that I can recognize the opportunities that will continue to be offered to me here at WCBR, and accept them, all these changes, with joy and with gratitude for living here.
And thank you, Nancy. And thank you for joining us today and sharing your life with us and some of your stories. I've appreciated the time. A healthy and just society ensures that everyone can participate and contribute in meaningful ways. Too often in our society, opportunities for older adults or elders are limited, and we minimize their contributions. This is ageism, and we're here to stop it. Changing the way we talk about older adults and aging will change attitudes, advance cultures, structures, policies, and programs that support us at every age and every stage of life. We are all here because of the lived experiences of others, our own experiences, and what we have learned from them. Throughout life, we are always becoming. Until next time, what does becoming bolder mean to you?